Hey everyone, welcome to the show. Coming up this week, Walt Disney World celebrates its 44th birthday by raising annual pass ticket prices, and rumors are heating up that they may be making some changes to how they price regular theme park tickets. We'll have details. SeaWorld and the Orlando Sentinel are being sued over a leaked phone call, and Disney Springs continues to roll out new offerings with the opening of the new Morimoto Asia restaurant. And John and Kevin have a long-awaited dining review on the Boathouse restaurant at Disney Springs. All that coming up next. From the Bob Varley Studio in Orlando, Florida, this is the Diz Unplugged. This is the Diz Unplugged, episode 855 for the week of October 6, 2015. The Diz Unplugged is brought to you by Dreams Unlimited Travel, experts at helping you plan the perfect Disney vacation. Visit them on the web at www.dreamsunlimitedtravel.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show, coming to you live from the Bob Varley Studio in Orlando, Florida. I'm your host, Pete Werner, joined at the table this week by my good friends, John Magi.
Hi, everybody.
Kevin Close.
Afternoon.
Kathy Werling.
Hi, everybody.
Julie Martin.
Hello.
Back in the production nook, I'm having trouble talking today. Back in the production nook, our associate producer, Rhino Clavin.
Hello.
Along with our producer, Gregory Williams.
Hi.
And our intern, Junior.
Hello.
That's your name now.
Oh,
I have officially taken Teresa's moniker for you. Of course, his name is Steve Porter. But we are now calling him Junior. You will all refer to him as Junior.
Oh, geez.
Henceforth.
That's like my least favorite name.
So say it.
Junior.
All right, some stuff in housekeeping. First of all, I want to just send big, big props out to Craig Williams and Michael Bowling on the release of Michael's new show, Connecting with Walt, getting rave reviews from our listeners, great downloads. Everybody seems to love it. And, I mean, great job, guys. Just a great, great job. You can listen to Connecting with Walt. It's all about the history of Disney and Walt Disney World. DizUnplugged.com, where you'll find all our shows, our show notes, anything relating to the show, DizUnplugged.com. Of course, you can go to iTunes and subscribe to our feed. If you're subscribed to this show on iTunes, you're automatically going to get the Connecting with Walt series as it comes out. We'll be doing, these are month-long series, so for October, there's a show coming out every Friday, and then then in January, the next round will come out, and it'll be once a quarter. You'll have four shows a month every quarter, and all about different aspects of the history of Disney and of Disney World. So really excited at the great response that this got. We've been talking about doing this for several months, and just, you know, hats off to Michael and Craig for, especially Michael, for the amount of research he does on these. I mean, they're incredible. So wanted to make sure I mentioned that. Also, if you would like to send us a voicemail or an email, questions, comments about the show, DizUnplugged.com/contact is where you need to go, or you can just go to DizUnplugged.com and look for the contact us in the right margin, and you can leave a voicemail directly from that page. You don't have to call. You don't have to do anything. You can just do it right from your computer, or fill out the form and send us an email. If you have questions, comments, anything for the show, DizUnplugged.com/contact. Also want to remind everyone about the other editions of the Diz Unplugged that we put out every week. The Disneyland edition comes out goes live every Sunday night, 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific. I don't know what is wrong with me today. 8 p.m. Pacific time, Mixlr.com if you want to listen live. And then the shows are released Monday and Tuesday on iTunes. This week, the team has the West Coast take on the new annual pass news. Plus, listener Jason chats about his first visit to Mickey's Halloween party, and listener Matt reviews the new Jungle Cruise Safari, Sunrise Safari.
You are having trouble today.
I am, man. I don't know what's going on.
You need to eat a candy bar or something.
I think so.
Some more Gorgeous.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing, is I am eating. It's like, it's not like I'm starving myself, but, you know, I'm just walking a lot, and, you know, I've lost 3.5-4 pounds since last Tuesday. So it's just drop. Once I start moving, once I start exercising, I never realized how sedentary I was until the last month.
We say it all the time. We say our biggest problem is we don't do anything.
And I'm telling you, once I start moving, it just drops off me. And, you know, my mother, God bless her, she's like, oh, you look good, but be careful. You know, I'm like, Ma, it's okay. Also, every Wednesday, live, 1 p.m. Eastern, disunplugged.com, The Trip. With Jenny Lynn Knopp and Teresa Eccles. Craig, do we know what's up this week?
Yeah, this week they are going to talk about Ripley's auditorium or whatever the heck it's called on International Drive. Yeah.
Okay. So that's this Wednesday, 1 p.m. Eastern. You can see that live. And, of course, Thursdays, 1 p.m. Eastern, disunplugged.com, the Universal edition of the Dis Unplugged, starring the lovely and talented Gregory Williams with his sidekick, Rhino. And Rhino's sidekick, Jenny Lynn.
He is not lovely and talented.
And what do you have for us this
week? This week, hopefully, we're doing a review of the newest restaurant coming to City Walk, the NBC Sports Grill and Brew. It's supposed to open up today at 4 o'clock. I'm not sure if that's actually going to happen. So if it doesn't, then I don't know what the heck we're talking about.
Completely forgot about that.
Is it where the NBA restaurant was?
No, that's where NASCAR was before. Oh. So.
That was a pretty quick turnaround for that.
It's been about a year. It closed down, November 1st.
Oh, wow.
And, wow. I didn't think it was that long.
Yeah, I mean, but still, a year to turn around and have a brand new restaurant in there, including Yeah, there's like a 80-foot-long TV screen on the outside of it. So they've done a lot.
Cool. Yeah. All right, that's Thursday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, disunplugged.com, if you want to check that out. Of course, all our shows are available on iTunes and on YouTube, youtube.com/WDWinfo, if you want to watch the video version. So you can go check that out, and while you're there, go ahead and subscribe to our channel. We can use all the subscribers we can get, so we can do that. That's it for me in housekeeping. Anybody else have anything they want to...
I do, wait, me. Our 2016 ABD our 2016 Diz exclusive ABD trips are ready to book. The folks on the who had already notified me have been notified that they can book. We're doing the Italy Switzerland trip. It used to be called
Alpine Magic.
Alpine Magic. They don't call it that
it's
anymore.
It's still called Alpine Magic on our site.
All right, but ABD doesn't know what I'm talking about when I say Alpine Magic. We're going August 26th through September 2nd, so that'll tie into Labor Day weekend. The cost is $5,219 per adult based on double occupancy, and if you're traveling as a single, it's $7,309.
Which, believe it or not, is not bad.
No, it's
actually
not.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, in general, the price is good, but that single supplement is usually double.
Mm, I agree. This is pretty cool. You fly into Milan, and we stay in Stresa. And move on to Lake Como, then Zermatt, and it's my understanding that the hotel in Zermatt is at the base of the Matterhorn.
Mm.
And then we end up in Lake Lucerne.
Is there a fast pass?
Nope, you're allowed to hike at will. And then October 23rd through the 28th is our Diz exclusive Backstage Magic trip for Halloween. The cost is $3,099 per adult based on double occupancy. And $4,339 for a single supplement.
I want everybody to know that this is our only Backstage Magic for 2016. So if you want to travel with us and do all the cool stuff that we usually do when we go on a Backstage Magic, that's your only opportunity.
If you've written to me about the San Francisco Backstage Magic mashup, that has been put off for a year. We aren't doing one in 2017.
Or 16.
2016, excuse me. You're rubbing off on me. I can't talk about it either. Maybe it's contagious. Because of the, what did you call it? The mega meet. So we had the only date that we could get coincided with that. So that's not going to happen in 2016.
Okay.
That's great. It. I'm done down.
Anything else? Anybody else?
I have one. James Kays from the Delaware Give Kids the World meet wants everybody to know that there's a Pirates and Princess walk run on October the 18th. And the best part about that is if he gets 200 people that sign up, he is going to dress up as a princess.
I'm not sure that is the draw that people think.
Well, it would be interesting. And you don't need to walk or run, just as long as you sign up and pay your money. It counts towards the 200 people.
So you can just pay and be lazy.
But it benefits Give Kids the World. So
are you October doing that 18th. One? You going to do that one, Kathy? And you're fit to run sneakers?
I hadn't thought about that.
Huh? I'm pressuring you.
No pressure.
All right. Thank you, Kathy. Anything else?
I want to give out some information about Dizzapalooza this year. I'm getting a lot of inquiries about when will more information for our Dizzapalooza be released. I just want to let you know that we probably won't do anything new until November now. Kevin and I will be away for the rest of October, so other stuff's going on. So early November, you should see us start to finalize the plans for Dizzapalooza, including transportation options and signing up for transportation. So just sit tight, hang in there, and we'll make sure we get that to you in early November.
Awesome. All right, and if that's it for housekeeping, we'll move on to Johnny with the news.
All right, our first news story. SeaWorld and Orlando Sentinel sued for illegal wiretapping. A lawsuit has been filed against SeaWorld Parks and Entertainment, the Orlando Sentinel, and several other media outlets by a woman from Texas who claims they disseminated her private phone conversation against her wishes. In the suit, the woman said that in 2010, SeaWorld, quote, purchased a video recording of a personal and sensitive phone conversation, end quote, between herself and her longtime friend, SeaWorld employee John Hargrove. The suit claims that the phone conversation was recorded without her knowledge and sold to SeaWorld for, quote, a large sum of money. The video in question shows Hargrove drinking and repeatedly using a racial epithet.
Say slur.
Really, during a recorded cell phone conversation. Hargrove then left his job at SeaWorld before appearing in the critical documentary Blackfish. After that, he published a book that was also critical of the company. SeaWorld released the video to the Orlando Sentinel, who posted it online and in their newspaper. The woman is seeking damages for wiretapping, public disclosure of private information, and international...
intentional
infliction, and international... it's an international incident now.
That's when you inflict emotional damage with a French accent. Yeah.
An intentional infliction of emotional damage.
Well, this is, what this is part of is SeaWorld hitting back against anywhere they can against the people that were participated in or involved in Blackfish, in the documentary that was, I refer to as a left-wing hippie hit job on SeaWorld. So, I, again, not knowing all the details, if this was recorded without her knowledge and it was released publicly, they're in trouble. She's gonna get something, and this will never see the light of day in a courtroom because they'll settle with her before they let it. They don't need any more black eyes. But it looks like she was caught in the crossfire of SeaWorld trying to defend themselves against Blackfish. So, the laws vary from state to state about recording a phone call. Some say that both parties need to be aware in order for it to be legal. Other states say as long as one person is aware that the call is being recorded, it's legal. So it's going to come down to where people were when the call was made and, all that. But nonetheless, I don't think SeaWorld is going to want this in court because it's going to be a venue, ultimately, because it involves Blackfish, because it involves somebody involved with Blackfish. This guy John Hargrove is going to get called, and it's going to be another opportunity for SeaWorld's enemies to go after them. When you go into depositions and you go into court, this is one of the risks you run. So I don't think SeaWorld's ever going to let this see a courtroom, but we'll find out. It's serious charges when you're suing somebody for wiretapping. That's a serious charge. And if it turns out it's true, it may go beyond, because this is a civil case, it may go beyond civil into criminal, because wiretapping is a criminal activity. So, not that SeaWorld would be criminally negligent for that, but for taking it without checking the legality of it and then releasing it to the Orlando Sentinel, that could be a...
So does this now diminish the credibility of this Hargrove when it comes to his participation in Blackfish?
I'm sure the actual content of the conversation diminishes his credibility. I don't know that this lawsuit is going to speak to it, But if he's drunk and, you know, being a racist, that pretty much can do something to your credibility there. But
I think it also shows that he had a bone to pick with SeaWorld. And so he might have participated in the documentary to get back at SeaWorld
sure.
or what they did to him. So
sure. But, you know, this is, you know, this kind of reaction to Blackfish kind of gives you an understanding of how much it's hurt SeaWorld and how desperate they are to counter anything they can, because this is a desperate act to purchase a video of a private conversation, release it to the press, because you're trying to get at somebody who's coming at you. That's a pretty desperate act. And it just kind of goes to underscore how much damage Blackfish has done. I mean, certainly you can see it in the quarterly reports.
The stock prices.
Yeah. Blackfish, whatever your opinion of Blackfish is, it was effective to its stated purpose, which was to do as much damage to SeaWorld as possible. So, and the damage just keeps continuing.
All right, our next news story. Disney World increases the price of annual passes. Walt Disney World raised prices in areas that will affect not only those that visit Walt Disney World often, but also those who drive their own vehicles to the theme parks. The cost to park in theme park lots was increased from $17 to $20 a vehicle. Valet parking also went up from $15 to $25 per vehicle. However, those increases weren't the big news of the day. Without much fanfare, Walt Disney World also adjusted the names and benefits of their annual pass system and with it, raised prices for passes and a popular dining discount plan. The Tables in Wonderland discount card, which gives participants a 20% discount on meals at most table service restaurants, increased in price from $100 to $150 for annual pass holders and from $125 to $175 for Florida residents. The annual pass system now offers a Platinum Plus Pass, Platinum Pass, Gold Pass, Silver Pass, Weekday Select Pass, Epcot After 4 Pass, Water Parks Annual Pass, and Water Parks After 2 Annual Pass. The Platinum Plus Pass is basically what used to be the Premium Annual Pass and includes admission to the 4 theme parks, water parks, and ESPN Wide World of Sports. The Platinum Pass is the former regular annual pass and includes admission to the 4 theme parks. The Gold Pass is an annual pass only for Florida residents and DVC members. The new benefit for these 3 passes is the ability to download Disney PhotoPass photos. Memory Maker, which is the program used to access and view PhotoPass photos, is normally a $169 option available for purchase in advance and $199 if purchased while on vacation. The other passes are for Florida residents, with the exception of the Water Park Annual Pass, and are the same as what was available before. It's kind of complicated to go into the entire pricing structure, but basically what's happened is, in addition to a price increase and this restructuring, now there's blockout dates.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's all these dates.
Not on the Platinum
right,
passes.
Right. No, I'm talking about for Florida residents and DVC members.
Yeah.
Now there's dates where they can't use their pass for basically what amounts to an increase in price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That used to be called the seasonal pass.
Yeah.
My feeling is, if it's a big deal, stop buying them.
Well, you know, I mean, I think anybody who watches the show on any regular basis knows what I'm about to say. That if you know you're gonna buy it anyway, shut up, stop your bitching. You know, we know this is what they do. At least they made an effort to throw some extra value in with Memory Maker and PhotoPass. You know, there's that. I know for a lot of us, myself included, that's not a big deal. But if you need a little gratitude in your life, go take a look at what they did out in California. They raised the price of an annual pass to $1,000.
Yeah.
And I mean, the issues out in California are a bit different than the issues here. They have too many annual pass holders in California. That's their bread and butter out there. It's not the case here. So they need to discourage people from buying annual passes because they've got too many pass holders. And so that's why they're doing that out there. But, you know, again, you take a look, if you're an annual pass holder and you take a look at, you know, depending on how often you come, it's still a much better value than, you know, trying to hobble together discount tickets every time you're coming to the parks.
Right. There's something else, too, that's not mentioned in this article, is that Disney's now allowing everybody to do a monthly payment plan when it used to just be Florida residents. So that's helping people out quite a bit. That
right.
helps to take the sting away from
And the
that.
Nice thing about the monthly payment plan is there's no interest on it. There's no, you know, you're not buying it on credit. You're giving them your credit card. They're charging you a certain amount at purchase and then a set amount of money every month for the next 12 months.
And it's still less than the cost of one park ticket per month.
Right.
Here's what bothers me about this, though, is the idea that you've raised the prices and made blockout dates for Florida residents and your DVC and DVC members. This is your highest affinity group. And I think the logic here, or the idea behind this is that, well, these are the people who don't spend money in the parks. And I disagree with that. 1,000%.
I do too.
Just look at what Kevin and I do. The times that we go on our annual pass, we drop hundreds of dollars in the park. You know, it's just silly to think that this isn't your bread and butter. They should be enticing more and more Florida residents to go to Disney.
Well,
and here's it harder for them to go.
No, I, you know, from a business standpoint, I'm going to disagree with you. From a business standpoint, their turnstile attendance is up 11% this year. That's extraordinary. They have capacity problems.
Mm-hmm.
What are we bitching about? We're bitching about lines. We're bitching about the lines that we're seeing at for everything. We were just talking before the show about Food and Wine Festival, how crowded it is. And those aren't all, you know, that's not because of annual pass holders. That's because of people that are paying, you know, the 5-day ticket, the 6-day ticket.
Or a package that includes tickets.
Or the package that includes tickets. That's where their bread and butter is. So they have to structure these a little differently. So from a business standpoint, I get it. I wanted to read this email I got this morning from Hope Bathrick. She writes, my name is Hope. I live in Burlington, Vermont. I love your show. People who belong to the Diz boards and listen to the podcast are loving Disney fanatics. They think about Disney all the time, or at least I do. Disney is a place I remember from my childhood, my college program, and now bringing my young family there. I can't tell you every time I've gone. I can't tell you every ride we've went on. I can't even tell you everything that happened on all those trips. What I can tell you is that for a few days, my family got to be together. Well, we got to people watch, laugh, and sometimes even argue, but for a few days, it was our family. We didn't have to deal with the outside world. No work, no bills, just fun. We, like many families, have gone to Disney with only pennies to rub together, and at times, more money to spend. On what we would like. We've had trips where we really didn't buy souvenirs. Our souvenir was the trip or the vacation. We're going back in November for 3 days. Sure, it's not as long as I would like, but again, my family will be with our best friends on vacation. I don't think I could think of a better idea. I won't buy everything I want, but I will get to see my kids laugh. I will get to see memories be made, and that's all I could ask for. I have to admit, I'm not a DVC owner. I'm not an annual pass holder. So these changes don't really affect me other than the parking price. I also have to tell you that we totally go with the flow on our vacation. If a park is too busy, we go to another one. If a ride is too long we move on. I just have to sit back and wonder if we all didn't take part in a Disney message board, would these changes really affect us or make us this mad? I don't know that they would. Are we a little jaded in our expectations of Disney or just because of our knowledge? I hope I don't upset anyone with these questions. Again, I'm so thankful to the whole team. The amount of time and effort you put into the show is incredible every week. The site brings me to my happy place. I wait for the podcast to get my Disney fix. I think that is part of it. I think she raises a good point that the kind of attention that we pay to this and the kind of the way we follow it both here on the show and on the boards and on Disney sites all over the internet, I think make us a little more sensitive to these changes. But history should also be our teacher. We know the prices are going to go up. I at least appreciate that Disney is trying to add some value in here. I realize that for DVC members and Florida residents that are used to those tickets not having blackout dates, Nikki Mancini posted that, you know, as a DVC member, a lot of these blackout dates are happening during times when she, as a teacher, is out of school and can, you know, can can be here. So now she's got to pay more to get a ticket that allows her. You know, so I appreciate that. I appreciate where DVC members are coming from.
Jeff came up. Jeff, our friend Jeff, is also a DVC member, and he posted something that's also very true. Tickets are not part of your contract. You basically bought a hotel room. This was something they added, and they've changed it. It was never promised to you. It was never guaranteed.
In the very beginning, people who bought into Old Key West, when they first launched DVC, were getting annual passes every year. But they told them that it's not going to be
That's
forever.
That's going to go away, right?
And it did.
There's no guarantee that prices will stay the same or you'll be offered anything through DVC.
But there's nothing in your contract that says you get a discounted ticket. It's just a perk.
And I just wonder, what planet do people live on that they think prices aren't going to go up? You know, do you pitch a fit at the supermarket when they raise the price of milk? Do you say, I'm going to stop drinking milk? No, you understand that prices go up. It's just the nature. We live in a capitalist society. This is a multi-billion dollar business. This is what they're supposed to do. Look, I think it's up to each individual to determine whether or not there is value there for them. I'm not to people that look at these prices and say, you know what, it's just too expensive. I don't criticize you for that. I'm not at all. That's a value judgment every person gets the right to make because it's different for everybody. What's a value to me and what's a value to you may be vastly different. And the nice thing is neither one of us are wrong. Just because I see it one way and you see it another, neither one of us is wrong.
I can say as a single parent before, you know, I moved here, Disney was my entertainment budget for the year. So if the price went up, I just cut back a little bit somewhere else because to me, going to Disney with my family was a priority.
Right.
And now that I have an annual pass, and thankfully it's paid for by Dreams, it's still, if I had to pay for it, I still would do it because just a couple weeks ago, I was there with my family.
John, she'll pay for it herself.
Okay.
Well, you know, I was there with my family and I was there with my two grandchildren and we went to Typhoon Lagoon and the memories that we created. I mean, I get to go all the time, but that again was a special time for me and I'm willing to pay to continue to have those priceless family memories.
Here's where this affects the folks who aren't on the boards and aren't scrutinizing it. It's that family who comes and says, listen, I want to book a Disney vacation, and the price is shocking to them.
Yeah.
We have this happen all the time. People come to Dreams Unlimited Travel saying, well, this is the same price I can get through Disney. I thought I was going to get it cheaper through you because I can't afford Disney's prices. So this is where it affects the person who isn't on the boards and stuff. They see it as an initial price, and they're shocked. Maybe you come every other year, maybe you come every 3 years. But I think that's sort of the sad part is we're getting to the point where some people just can't afford it anymore.
But don't you think there's also that other side of people who come that don't know that Disney raised this and the whole Disney community is upset? And they just go, oh, okay, the price went up since the last time I checked.
Look, I'm going to tell you, every time, you know, I just paid for tickets for some family that was visiting from out of town. Every time I do it, I choke a little bit. Like, damn, that's expensive. However, at the end of the week, when I ask them how your week was, and I'm seeing the smiles, and I'm seeing how much fun they had, you know, there's value in that.
Mm-hmm.
There's value in that. And if you don't see the value in that, now I'm not saying that you may see the value in that and say, you know what? It's not for me. It's too much. Okay. But if you're just looking at the price and you're putting no value on those experiences, then maybe you need to look at your perspective. Maybe you need to challenge yourself to look at your perspective a little bit. What are you getting for that money? What are you getting for that money? Now, if you honestly, if you're looking at the experience and you're looking at all that stuff and you're saying, no, I just can't do it. Okay, then I get it. But if you're just kind of pushing that part of it off and just looking solely at the price, which I think a lot of people do, they don't actually sit down and balance out the thought of, okay, yeah, it's more money. Yeah, it's expensive. But this is what I'm getting for that. And what's, you know, is it worth it? Is it worth it for that? I don't think that other part comes into it. I think people just see the price go up and they act like Disney is a nonprofit organization. And They're Disney supposed World. To give they're supposed to give it to you at a better price than they give it to everybody else, and that's just not reality.
Going to Disney is a want, not a need.
Correct.
And I would say if money is a concern and you've also purchased tables in Wonderland in the past, maybe that's where you cut back.
Well, I'm sorry. If you use tables, I'm sorry. With tables in Wonderland is concerned, if you use tables in Wonderland at all, even at $150, worth it. Yeah. Worth it. I'm going to save that. I'm going to save that in three meals. I use my tables in Wonderland card all the time. I save a lot more than $150.
Also, remember, tables in Wonderland will get you parking. So we'll get you valet parking.
Yeah. And let's not, if you want to talk about valet parking, we went to a concert recently in Tampa, and valet parking was what, $60?
Yeah, one-way valet.
Well, even at hotels, let's compare apples to apples. Yeah. Even at hotels, it is not unusual to pay $30, $35 for valet parking per night as a hotel guest. So, you know, $25 is expensive, but it's valet. You can also self-park.
As going back to the wants and needs things, if you're into any kind of luxury goods go up every day, every year. Some places do it twice a year. Some places do it three times a year. The price just goes up. And what you have to decide, as you said, is do I still see a value in this? Everybody has that point in their head where things start to become just too expensive. I got an email today. Ralph Lauren sends me an email about Big and Tall men's clothes, and I found a T-shirt that I liked. And I thought, that's exciting. I want the T-shirt. So I went online to buy it. The T-shirt was $165 for a long-sleeve black T-shirt. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, I really like that and I really want that. I can't pay $165 for it. It passed the point where I see any value to it.
Correct.
I have a question. Why don't they have a non-photo pass option? Like, I understand that the prices could have gone up even for a non-photo pass option.
Because photo pass doesn't really cost Disney anything other than the cast member who's standing there taking the picture. And maybe the stuff to run the website.
Perceived value add.
Correct. Correct.
You know what? If you take it out, it really doesn't take much out of the price.
Yeah, I don't think. And again, they knew the inclusion of PhotoPass is, from my perspective anyway, they sat down and they mapped out their prices. And they said, okay, we've got to do something here because the villagers with the torches and the pitchforks are going to storm the castle. Mm-hmm. So we got to do something that we can say, well, we added this on for this $165 value. Well, it's only $165 value if you were actually going to use it in the first place. I've used PhotoPass once in my life. So I don't know that, you know, it's a value to me. The annual pass is a value to me.
Tables
in Wonderland, hands down.
Even at this increased price, I think Tables in Wonderland.
I've talked about this before. We talk about ourselves as the highest affinity group, and that's true. We're fans. We're huge fans. The people on the boards, the people who come to the site, the people who are in the chat room right now are huge fans. However, we make up a very, very small portion of the Disney audience.
Correct.
We used to go to pin events. And, you know, people would rant and rave. The pin events got more expensive, or they were limited editions, were too hard to get. And then one person finally came out and told me, he said, you know, you're a very small portion of the pin buying public.
Right.
We sell umpteen more, thousands and thousands of dollars, to people who buy a pin as they walk by.
Correct.
As to people who collect pins. That's the same thing with this. Our little group of the villagers, and while I'm not saying we're small, but in comparison to the people that visit Disney on an annual basis, our little group is kind of small. So while, you know, you're upsetting the affinity group, they're kind of convinced that the affinity group isn't going away.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to...
Just because we got
to
move on.
It starts to strand off into other things too, though. So like, for me, this obviously doesn't affect me because I have an annual pass with work. The majority of my friends down here only work at Universal. That's where they choose to work. They make, you know, the ones who have risen up, they're making $30,000, but the majority of them make $10,000 to $15,000 a year. And the same goes with, like, students at UCF. So all of those people that I'm friends with now have basically been blowing up Facebook saying, well, there goes Disney. We're not going there anymore. And so even though, yeah, you know, they can't afford it, they could, it would cost them a lot, but that starts affecting other people too now, because Like, you know, some people might just want to go with their families when they come into town.
Yeah, but when I made $10,000 to $15,000 a year, I had to decide between putting gas in the car and going to a movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Those are decisions you have to make when you make $15,000 a year.
And again, Disney is not a nonprofit where we're gonna do things on a slide. You know, it's not like going to, you know, community counseling where they're gonna do it on a sliding scale for you. This is the price, and if you can't afford it, okay.
I think
there are things I want that I can't afford.
Yeah.
There are things, I would love to have that, you know, $90,000 car, but no, it's outside my price range. I can't do that.
I think they should do it on a sliding scale. I think there should be a student discount available. I think there should be a certain maybe hospitality discount available. I think Disney misses out on the opportunity that there's so many Florida residents who can't afford to go to Disney that there's revenue they're missing downstream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's just my opinion.
I don't know, just from having
but worked, you're right about
having,
the lines and
having
the,
worked with them for 18 years, if there's a revenue stream out there, they find it. So I don't imagine that they've overlooked the Florida residents or the students or anybody. They have entire teams of people who do nothing but look for untapped revenue streams or revenue streams that aren't being utilized as well as they could be. So if that was there, I have to believe at this point, because the Florida resident thing and the student thing isn't a new phenomenon. Right. It's always been there.
And also, if they're not going to appeal to those people because of the fact that if they're trying to control crowds, these are the people who, if they couldn't have, they didn't have money for the pass, they don't have money to drop money on dinner and a souvenir.
Right. So. All right, we do need to move on, though.
All right. So our next news story, this is actually ties into this news story. Tiered pricing may be coming to U.S. Disney theme parks. On Sunday, Disneyland and Walt Disney World announced a new structure to their annual pass plans. Included among the changes were the inclusion of more blackout date periods where certain pass holders would be unable to enter parks using their passes. As a result, speculation has picked up that changes may also be coming to the pricing structure of daily theme park tickets. According to Fortune.com, guests at the U.S. Disney theme parks may soon pay more depending on the time of year they want to visit. This demand-based pricing model is currently used at Disneyland Paris, where guests pay based on three seasons, low, high, and peak. Attendance at the Disney parks has hit record highs in the recent years, which leads to guests experiencing high wait times for attractions and more crowds in the parks. The parks will be seeing a wave of construction over the next couple of years, so it stands to reason that they are expecting the attendance numbers to continue to rise as well. With Walt Disney World's My Magic Plus technology, the parks are able to have more control over crowd flow and what attractions the guests are visiting at certain times. This new pricing structure would work towards the same goal, potentially serving to lead more guests to travel during the off seasons.
Well, again, this is definitely a major departure for U.S. theme parks. This is called price yielding. It's done in hotels, the hotel business all the time.
Airline tickets
all are yielded based on demand, based on time of year and demand. So I get it. And I want to say we either talked about this rumor or I predicted this was next.
We talked about it for a while that we thought that this was
that
the next
I
step.
Think I don't remember. I don't remember if I heard it somewhere or if I predicted they were going to go to a price yield model. But I wouldn't be surprised if I predicted it because I seem to be on a hot streak with that this year. Again, I know I sound like a capitalist pig, but I am a capitalist pig. So they're going, if they can get $200 for something they're charging $154 now, that's what they're going to do. The only time this is going to change is when people stop paying it, when the crowds go down. You know, people talk about Disney Cruise Line and how Disney Cruise Line has priced so many people out of the market that they can't afford Disney Cruise Line. Absolutely. I get it. However, those ships are sailing 98% full. Yeah. So why is Disney going to lower the price? It's common sense when it comes to business. It's common sense. I get it sucks. I get it sucks. But if it was your business, what would you do?
Right.
Okay.
Here's what makes me think that this is very much a possibility and very much might be coming. They did away with the no expiration option on tickets. So the next step is that you have tickets that expire. we have 14 days from first use. Well, maybe now you have to use it by a certain date. So now you have people buying a ticket or a package with a ticket that's locked into the dates of their travel rather than spilling over into other times of the year when they're not as busy. I'm looking at the optimistic side of this, saying that maybe what we'll see is if you want to travel, you know, right after New Year's before President's Day, it might be a little less expensive.
Well, I think that's what you're going to see. I think you will see the pricing, and that's where Disney fans, the folks who watch the show, the folks who visit the boards, that's where they might be okay with this, because Disney fans, not unilaterally, of course, but I think a higher than average number of Disney fans travel in the off times because the crowds are less, because the prices at the hotels tend to be better, discounts are available. Why is free dining only available really in, you know, in the fall or in September? Because that's when the crowds are lower. Although you'd never know it right now. But I, you know, that may be one way to offset it. If your pricing during the holiday times is, let's say, 20% higher than average, but it's 20% lower in the off season, they may not have, depending on how they do it. And this is a rumor right now. This has not been announced. But, you know, we talked about it. Fortune.com, Fortune Magazine, not exactly a fly-by-night operation. If they're talking about it, they've got some information. Mm-hmm. So I think this is probably a leak to Fortune to get it out there. Fortune is going to be more toward the investor community. That's going to help Disney stock price dramatically if they do this. And also, you know, it kind of sends that warning shot across everybody's bow. Guess what? This is coming. This is not the sort of thing they're just going to randomly announce. This is something they're going to have to soften the ground for, because it is a major departure from how they have normally done their price increases and handled the pricing of their tickets. So,
doesn't Universal Studios already do this with their front of the line access?
Well, with their express passes, yes.
Isn't it more expensive on crowded days?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. But that's your express pass, not your ticket into the park.
But the model is already there.
But what you're going to see, Disney will do it, and within a month, Universal will be doing it. Yeah. Universal will absolutely follow that track.
And the Disney hotels are already doing this.
All hotels. Yeah, Disney hotels started yielding prices, I think, I want to say about 7-8 years ago. For a long time, they would release their prices for the year, and that was that. Those were the prices, no matter, you know, what their occupancy was, those were their prices. Then they started yielding their rates so that, you know, we have a general price, but if they experience a surge at a particular resort, they'll raise the price. So, but all hotels do that. Every single hotel in existence yields their rates. Every single one. So it's not unusual. But so we'll see if that one comes to pass. I have a feeling we may be seeing that. I'm going to say if this is being talked about in Fortune now, January, they'll make an announcement in January. Yeah.
Here's my question. So if,
or they'll do it right before Christmas.
If they're going to do this with the pricing, there's really not going to be an off season, because people that see when the prices are low, there's never going to be a time when the parks aren't crowded really now.
Because I agree with you.
It's very possible.
I thought that with the same thing with the annual pass and the blackout dates. If this is going to draw people who are upset about the price increase and who are saying this could change their plans, this is going to draw them.
Yeah,
and I understand that people with school-age kids, that's always going to be a problem, and Disney isn't really concerned.
We are in an era right now where capacity issue is probably the single biggest thing facing all theme parks, or at least Universal and Disney, but especially Disney. They have a capacity issue. They are going to have to build another theme park. There's no question about it. They are going to have to build another theme park. The question is when and how quickly. So they're investing all this in Star Wars. And that's great. That'll help. But we're talking, what are we talking about, 20 acres? We're not talking about, you know, the Magic Kingdom, the smallest of the theme parks. Actually, Hollywood Studios is the smallest. But Magic Kingdom's roughly about 100 acres. So you're talking about something one-fifth the size of the Magic Kingdom. That's not going to give you massive capacity
expansion. And for the next couple of years, it's going to get worse.
It's going to get a lot worse. But all right, we need to move on.
So. All right. We have a bonus news story this week. Morimoto Asia opens to the public. September 29th marked the opening of Disney Springs' newest eatery, Morimoto Asia, the new signature dining restaurant by Iron Chef Masaharu Morimoto. Features a variety of Asian-inspired dishes from dim sum to sushi and entrees ranging from Kung Pao chicken to an 18-ounce Angus beef ribeye steak. Craig Williams was on hand for the opening. Along with Corey. Well, that's not in my little copy you sent me. And put together... I don't know who
I love in. Putting the words in his mouth.
You have to.
I am the puppet master.
They were both on hand, and apparently Craig put together a video.
Okay.
The most disturbing.
Yeah, I just got to. I think I just got to watch a murder.
It was. It was a murder.
The fish was already dead. Thank God.
Yeah.
Oh my Lord. Okay. Well, thank you for that, Craig. Talk to us about your impressions of Morimoto.
Our impressions, and I'll speak for Corey too. We didn't really get to do a full experience, as you could see there.
It was an event.
Yeah, it was an event. They were just trying to show off. That's. Chef Morimoto isn't there every night cutting apart 100-pound tuna and then making 60-foot-long tuna rolls. But the little bit of food that we did get to sample, mostly sushi, the one thing I can say is that it is extremely fresh. They are, I think it's going to be the highest quality. Not to take anything down from like California Grill, which has delicious, great sushi rolls, but the actual like the cold sushi bar that's upstairs that just specializes in sushi only. I mean, it was so fresh, very delicious. Didn't get to try any of the entrees or anything, but I know they all have a very Asian-inspired feel to it, which I think Disney needs more of that, because right now they really have like the crap place in China, and that's about it. But in terms of the restaurant, it's
beautiful. Well, you get the sushi bar at the Polynesian, and of course the California Grill.
Yeah, well,
the one in the Swan, I forget the name of it.
Yeah,
Kimonos.
Yeah, and I mean sushi is covered, but in terms of good Asian with like Chinese style food,
right,
like that, I think we're kind of lacking. But the restaurant itself is absolutely stunning on the inside.
Oh, so this isn't Japanese style?
No, it's all mix. It's all Asian.
It's Asian fusion. Yeah.
We have some friends coming in from out of town, and we're going at the beginning of November. We have dinner reservations.
Yeah, and from what I understand, I actually was going back and forth with one of our fans last night on Twitter. Morimoto's been sticking around for the first little while, too, while the restaurant's opening up. A lot of people have reported seeing him in there, taking pictures with people, so that says a lot about how into this restaurant he is, that he's making sure it gets off to the good
start. Well, this is high profile. I don't care where, you know... You open a restaurant at Disney World, I don't care who you are. This is how, I want them to. I want Gordon Ramsay. I want them to bring a Gordon Ramsay restaurant in the worst way.
He's really got a Disney personality.
You want him to yell at you the whole time you're eating?
Apparently, Morimoto also said that they, after he's gone, they are not to make any changes to the menu unless he is here to supervise how it's made, make sure that it is the right way, and it will always have to live up to his standards. So.
And the prices are up there. This is definitely high-end signature. I know the ribeye, the 18-ounce Angus ribeye was like $55.
Yeah, so the entrees are going about $20 up.
Yeah.
Which.
So it's a typical signature restaurant. I know it's got a lot of buzz. I've heard a lot of good things. Coming out
this
of
is
that,
the old mannequin space, just for people who don't know what it is. Oh. It's in the old mannequins building.
Yep. We had a chance to actually see the inside of the space.
If you listen quietly, you can hear Tommy Sandvik crying.
We had a chance to have a tour of the actual space when nobody was around. It's absolutely beautiful.
It is.
Incredibly beautiful space that they've done.
Does it still have the rotating floor?
It does.
And the mannequins
are still there. The theme behind this is that this was the bottling company for Disney Springs as part of the theming of Disney Springs. So there's an impressive chandelier made out of the bottles, and all the bottles on the table and the glasses are from the bottling company. It's pretty cool.
Well, and they even have Morimoto exclusive beers there, too.
Oh,
so
cool.
All kind of ties in together. I think this is going to have a line for it a lot whenever we're in busier times. It's got a lot of promise.
Some information to share with you. It's not available in Disney systems yet to book. You have to book it either directly or through OpenTable. It's not in Disney's dining system yet. You can't use the dining plan there.
OpenTable only does a month at a time. You can only book through the end of October at this point.
and it doesn't take tables in Wonderland. So that's all coming, apparently.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Craig, for that. And thank you, John, for the news. We're going to move on to rapid fire. We're going to start with you, John.
All right. I've got two, and I know we're running late. So let me see if I can get through these quick.
That's all right.
As we're mentioned, we had a whole bunch of agents in town this past week. And one of the things we got to do as a group was we got to have a meeting with the folks who are product development and also marketing for the VIP tours, which is really cool. A lot of good information about the VIP tours. These are the people in the parks who wear the vests, and you pay a lot of money, and you sort of have this special private tour. And they do things where they build the tours around people. You go to multiple parks on one day. It's very cool. But I found out about something that I didn't know. They have something called the Ultimate Day at Epcot Food and Wine Festival Tour. And basically, you have a special itinerary just for folks during Food and Wine Festival. There is a special toast and best seats in the house for celebrity chef focused brunch, exclusive beverage demonstrations, and you get to taste the beverages. You get to ride Test Track and Soarin' if you want. Introduction to the new Sustainable Chew Marketplace. A special backstage tour of the land's greenhouse gardens, which is special for this tour only. And then there's special seating for all of the celebrity chef stuff and all of the special things that they do. And they say that you're in the position where you get to sort of taste the food. You know how they make the food and they give it out. You'll be there to taste the food. The tour is $399 per person plus tax. Theme park admission is not included in that. There's a discount for annual pass holders, DVC members, Disney Reward card holders at 15%. All guests must be 21 years of age, and this is only Fridays and Sundays throughout the festival. So if you are someone who comes to the Food and Wine Festival often and you're looking for something new to do at Disney and something different, I think this might be something cool to check out. You can go to Disney's website and book it, or if you're a Dreams Unlimited Travel client, you can go to your agent, and your agent can book that for you. But it looked like it was something that might be neat, especially for folks who, you know, come year after year.
Awesome.
And the second rapid fire I have is hot off the presses.
Mm-hmm.
Just happened this morning. Disney Cruise Line unveils itineraries for early 2017. They do this every year. They open up the spring of the next year's itineraries and the fall of the previous year. So we're looking 2 years ago. So we're looking at spring of 2017 being out now. No huge surprises. You're looking at all the usual itineraries out of Port Canaveral, 7-night Eastern and Western, 3- and 4-night on the Dream. The Wonder will also be going out of Port Canaveral for a bit. The Magic will be going out of Miami. And then there will also be some Galveston sailings and San Juan sailings as well. But this isn't those special itineraries that everybody's waiting for. Where are they going? Are they doing the Med? Are they doing this? Are they doing Northern Europe again? This is only for the very early parts of 2017. But if you're looking to plan, it's great to have that information now. So good luck.
And right. It's for Gold and Platinum.
Yes,
tomorrow, and then Thursday it'll be open to the public.
I apologize. Gold and Platinum Castaway Club members can book tomorrow, the 7th, and then on the 8th it's open to everybody. Something to keep in mind is that when it's open only to the Gold and Platinum members, you have to call it in. It will not be available on their website for booking.
All right. Thank you, John. Kevin?
I have something shocking. I have a Star Wars rapid fire.
Wow.
Did you hit your head?
Really? Can you tell I couldn't find anything else?
Yeah.
Beginning October 5th, guests with guests with reservations for the Star Wars Day at Sea itineraries aboard the Disney Fantasy will have the opportunity to purchase exclusive Star Wars crap and commemorative merchandise. Crap will be available to purchase through a special link on DisneyCruise.com under My Disney Cruise. /gifts and amenities/ Star Wars Day at Sea merchandise.
They had a Louis Vuitton Princess Leia purse. He'd be all over it.
Not true. Guests will... no Star Wars. Guests will need to validate their reservation and sale date in order to purchase the merchandise. The sale dates for these itineraries are as follows: January 9th, January 23rd, February 6th, February 20th, March 5th, March 19th, April 2nd, and April 16th. Select guests may be eligible for Star Wars Day at Sea merchandise discounts. Gold and Platinum Castaway Club members will receive a 10% discount on their crap, and cast and crew members will receive their usual cast member merchandise discount of 25-35 on applicable merchandise. Once on board, guests should check their personal navigator for the merchandise pickup location. That's it.
Awesome.
Now I'm going to get in line for the movie.
Thank you, Kevin. Kathy.
Okay, first we have to have a moment of silence because Duffy the Bear has left Epcot.
Ha! I knew I'd take him down.
Yes, so Duffy is no longer entertaining guests in the park.
He got shot by the dentist from Michigan, didn't he?
Yeah.
Oh! and cut up by Morimoto.
Yeah, apparently. But now Daisy Duck will be meeting guests at the Disney.
We saw Daisy.
Much better.
Much
better.
Much better. She's hard to find.
She is hard to find. You're absolutely right.
She looks like Gypsy Daisy Duck.
She does.
That's from the Magic Kingdom, where she's a fortune teller.
Oh. Okay.
Who is Gypsy Daisy Duck?
We have no pictures of Daisy Duck on our website.
See, it's so hard. I know.
She has agoraphobia.
I think that was Daisy Duke.
Oh, no. No short shorts.
You're right. It does look like it looks, but I think it's Tyne Daly Gypsy. not Bette Midler Gypsy.
Oh my God!
There are like 12 people who think that's funny. One. Okay.
Don't you remember all the billboards all over the place when Tyne Daly was doing Gypsy, and there's just pictures of like Tyne Daly like this. Sorry. Go ahead. You may continue.
That's it.
All right. Thank you, Kat.
Very rapid.
Yes.
Jules?
Mine is also very rapid. It's the price increase for
Is it about Tyne Daly?
Did I steal your rapid fire? I'm sorry.
So I have no rapid fire.
The rapid fire list.
Sorry about that, Jules.
Sorry.
All right. Rhina. Rhino Gyno.
Excuse me. Oh, great. Mine is the Good Dinosaur preview is coming into the One Man's Dream
Starring
Theater.
Tyne Daly
will be there. It's going to begin on October 16th, and I believe it's running. I can't remember the date it's running to. I
December 3rd.
Yeah, I was
going
to say
like
almost
that.
To the end of the busy season. But this is going to replace the final video for the time being. And that's it. It's a weird place to put this preview, but
aren't they putting in One Man's Dream?
Yeah, that was my rapid
fire.
They're
all that stuff in the parking lot, right?
What?
No, they're just moving it. People get very upset when they talk about One Man's Dream being moved or touched.
Yeah. It's a holy ground, you know. His desk is there, and his ashtrays.
No, his desk is gone.
Oh, they got rid of his desk.
They packed it up. Yep. There's just a blank wall there now where his desk, his office was.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Everything that I had in there is weird.
I'm having it moved into him.
Oh, okay.
All right. Thank you, Rhino. Craig?
Okay, Pecos Bill Tall Tale Inn and Cafe has a new menu that is Tex-Mex inspired, I guess would be the best way to say it. It is very similar to the menu that they already had at the Tortuga Tavern. That it's essentially connected to, but now it's going to offer stuff like beef burritos, beef fajita platters, beef rice bowls, chicken burritos.
Just what you want to eat in a theme park.
Kind of like their knockoff version of Chipotle, but does not look nearly as good as Chipotle.
Has anyone tried it yet?
I was there, and we decided not to eat there because it did not look good.
No?
There were no choices for our children.
Really?
I'm like, really? It's peanut butter and jelly. I can't remember what some of the other ones were. But they were things that my kids would not eat.
Yeah.
So I was very disappointed.
Remember when they were going to take the backs off the chairs?
Yeah.
We went to Columbia Harbor.
They did. They did take it off there.
Columbia Harbor House has
And we usually eat at Pecos Bill. We always eat there. Mm-hmm. After this menu change, I was like, what the?
Well, apparently my mother isn't watching because she's calling.
I think
we're usually done by 2, so she's right.
I think it's weird that the only place to get a burger in the Magic Kingdom now is Cosmic Rays.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. There's no...
And they have rearranged the Emporium. because when I went in there and I thought it was going to be on the ladies' side, it was all baby stuff now. So everything has been rearranged. And it's only been like, I don't know, maybe 3 weeks since I've been there.
It rocked your world.
It did. I was like, oh, I can't find anything.
You poor baby.
No chair, no backs on the chairs.
Sunny Eclipse had it in his contract that his place was the only place allowed to have burgers.
And I'm fine with that, but they should have tried to come up with something a little more creative than this. It just doesn't even sound good. It doesn't look that appealing. I'll try it at some point.
But yeah, we run into the bathroom like every other hour after you eat lunch or dinner.
It bothers me that the...
I wasn't racist at all.
Really?
No, I mean, like, Mexican food doesn't go through you?
Well, the other
way... No, it does. It goes through both of us because we have no gallbladder. ice cream cone's going to go
I'm
going
to bring this all back.
But okay, yeah, we got to move on. We got to move on.
I have one last thing to say about it. The Fixin's bar is part of it too, so that is there. And on top of what they already give you, then you have to top whatever else you want on there too. So some people like that, others don't.
The Fixin's bar did look good. It had like guacamole, queso cheese.
I want somebody to go try this.
Okay,
and come back with a report. Okay,
I'll be back in 15 minutes.
All right. Thank you, Craig. Junior.
Yes, mine is that the Atlanta Braves may or may not be moving from the ESPN Wide World of Sports complex. WESH2 News. They reported that there might be a stadium for spring training opening in St. Petersburg. Disney had a comment basically saying, we're just excited for the upcoming season and didn't address the issue, and the Atlanta Braves said nothing. So... they may or may not be leaving. It sounds like they are leaving.
It also may be a negotiation. That sounds like a negotiation tactic to me. Maybe the Atlanta Braves want concessions from Disney to keep spring training there. So they're saying, oh, you know what? Because it's a typical tactic. We can go move to St. Petersburg. Mm-hmm. And that's so if neither side is saying anything, neither side is confirming or denying, it's a negotiation.
I don't think Disney has much to worry about because I'm sure another team that is probably a hot ticket to be on Disney property to have your spring training on Disney property. I'm sure another team would jump right at that.
I don't know. Maybe. But it sounds like a negotiation tactic to me. So we'll see. Thank you for that, Steve. All right. Before we wrap up, John and Kevin had a chance to experience the Boathouse restaurant at Disney Springs a little while ago, and they're finally...
It was in 2007.
It was in 2007. and they have their review. I know you guys have been waiting a long time for a dining review, so here you go.
It's a tale of two cities.
It was the best of times
right. And the worst of times. The Boathouse is beautiful.
It is.
It is much larger than it looks from the outside, and it all goes along the lakefront, the waterfront.
Incredible location.
It is an incredible location, and it is huge inside, but it's broken up into smaller rooms. We've actually been twice now. Once we did off-the-menu ordering, and we just recently, all of the agents had a chance to have lunch in there, so we got to try some of the stuff off the menu, but it was a fixed menu. We had no choices there. So we're going to talk about all of the food, but this is really spread over two times. We just walked in. We didn't even have a reservation. Oh, we did have a reservation, but we arrived like 40 minutes early, and they let us go in, and they asked us if we wanted to sit in the boat. And at first I thought, I'm not sure what that means. I didn't realize there was a real boat. We got to sit in the boat right when you walk in the door.
Which kind of made it like great from the beginning.
Right.
It was like, this is so cool. I'm in the boat.
And everybody wanted to take our picture sitting in the boat, so... it was just, oh, look, there are people in the boat. When you walked in, it looked like people greeting camp kids. It was two hostesses and 12 women in Boathouse polo shirts. I thought, this is the arts and crafts team.
Oh, crap.
Julie, you're in
the
a shot.
Shot. I can't see.
Yeah, watch. Try and watch that monitor.
I know, but I'm so close to it. I don't think I was that close to it last time.
I did that to Craig during his section, too. I was stretching in it.
All right.
Yeah, sorry.
All right. Our server was great. We started out, we had some appetizers. And there were four of us, so we tried a bunch of stuff. We tried the firecracker shrimp, which was very good. If you've ever had...
Okay. I was going to say, the pictures aren't... what you got coming up on the monitor was not coming out on the feed.
So. This is firecracker shrimp. If you've had Bang Bang shrimp at...
It's similar.
At Bonefish Grill.
Bonefish,
it's kind of the same. What else did we have? Show me another picture. this was the crab dip. The yellow, jumbo lump crab and avocado. There were four of us at the table. Valerie thought this was the best thing
ever. I thought I recognized the back of her head.
Yep, yeah. That's why we're jumping Valerie with us. This was the lobster bisque.
I got to say, the lump crabfish dip was very good, and the lobster bisque was very good. It's actually green flakes. It's actually green.
No. The crab stuff. It had like a weird sauce.
Tarragon remoulade.
Yeah. It was actually very good. And this was a good bisque. Bisque is tough because sometimes it's a little too.
They put too much sherry
in it and stuff.
It looks like the perfect color.
All right, show me another picture. I want to go in order.
Looks like you also had a Caesar salad.
This was a Caesar salad, and it was huge. We split it, and
not a great Caesar salad.
Yep. If you've ever had Caesar salad at
Bull and Bear,
you are ruined for life. John had the pork chop, which he thought was...
I thought the pork chop was very good. For the price, I felt it was small. I've been places where they give you a giant pork chop.
Well, compared to your knife, looking at your knife.
Right, that's why I put the knife and fork on the plate. The pork chop was, in my opinion, expensive... But very tasty.
Very tasty. Yeah, I had the same thing. How much?
27.
Yeah.
And you get nothing with that. There's no sides with it.
Right.
It's just a pork chop.
A la carte.
However, cooked to perfection and delicious.
See, I had that when I was there back in May, and I said the same thing. I thought the pork chop was absolutely out of this world, but I thought it was a little expensive.
Next picture.
Mac and cheese.
We did. We had the lobster mac and cheese with bacon. Again, everybody loved that. That was terrific.
I think this has like an andouille sausage in it.
It does.
It's a little bit on the spicy side, but it was very good. This was also one of the things they brought to the table for our agents to try. Did you get a chance to try that, Kathy?
Yeah, it was good.
It was very tasty.
Yeah. It was the shrimp and andouille mac and cheese, and that's $21 for that bowl. Mm. Oh, that's Valerie's swordfish. The swordfish was $31, and it was served with sweet corn, fennel, andouille, and potato hash with a Creole butter sauce.
And I will tell you, the hash she had was probably the best bite of the day.
I was about to say that sounds better than the fish.
It was of everything that was put on the plate, I wanted a big giant bowl of that hash.
Valerie's father told her if there's ever swordfish on a menu, you have to order it. So she lives by that rule. So if we go to a restaurant and they have swordfish, Valerie orders the swordfish. She thought this was good. This was a huge portion. A lot of this went home.
It wasn't that thick. Usually swordfish is a nice thick piece of fish. This was a little bit thinner than usual, but it was very tasty. Again, we had a chance to sort of try everybody else's dish.
Here's where the bad times come in.
Yeah,
this is the worst. I ordered something called a dockside bucket.
Mm.
Doesn't that sound big?
Mm-mm.
I got the... panko breaded scallops. This was $19.
Bring the picture up again.
Wait.
This was $19.
Four of these things?
Four. They were $5 a scallop. Wow. And they were about as big as a 50-cent piece.
Well, you can tell because I know the ramekin's no more than
You know how the size of a regular ramekin is?
And I kept saying to him, did you forget some? Did you spill it? I think $20 for four scallops is a complete utter ripoff. We have a place here out on Aloma Boulevard. I can't think of it.
It's out in Aloma.
Called Boston's Fish House. And for $20, you get more scallops than you can possibly eat. And I think, I understand it's on Disney property, but $20 for four scallops is ridiculous.
This is one of those things where everyone was sharing and trying it, and it was like almost sad. We're like, Kevin, don't give us any. Okay.
I gave just felt like a scallop that they could share between the two of us, that they could all try it. I'm sorry, four scallops.
That's absurd.
No.
It wasn't special.
I'm sorry, you know something? They were okay. However, I was so aghast that they were $5 a scallop. That's what I kept thinking as I ate them. I upgraded to a sea-salted baked potato. I'm sorry? There it is. That little black thing is my sea-salted baked potato.
So did you have to cut it open yourself?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And
when you got through the charcoal outer part.
Does it look like it's been cooked for 3 or 4 days?
Yeah.
It was raw in the middle.
Ew.
So I was very disappointed in my meal kind of busted.
Yeah, Kevin's meal really went down. Everyone else's was good. His was really a disappointment.
And then we also got some fries. We got some Parmesan fries. The Parmesan fries, they were truffle fries, excuse me. These are $12. And they were refrigerated. There's no other way to describe it other than they were refrigerated.
So let me tell you, they come out and they're cold. And everyone tasted and they were cold. So I called the waiter over and I said, can we please have some hot fries? And he went in the back, and so he took him and took him away. And a manager came out, and he said, "You'll burn your face on these," and put the fries down. And I thought, well, that's a weird way to present
burn your them. Face on these.
You'll burn your
However,
face on these.
What he didn't tell you was we were all done.
Right. After we'd all eaten, the fries came out. So it was like, it was a weird, instead of just saying, "Oh, here's your fries. I'm sorry your first batch was cold," it was kind of like he was mad that we sent them back. And I thought, don't eat them because they're probably spat on, but or worse.
And the last thing is
Parmesan and saliva.
The last thing we ordered was what I consider to be the other world's biggest ripoff. Besides my $20 scallops, we ordered asparagus.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That asparagus right there is $12.
Mm-hmm.
But that's inked. Think about it. That's $12 asparagus.
They were good, but they weren't $12.
They brought some to the group when we had our...
Well, we also went a couple months ago, and we split that like among the table. But it was like you needed to enjoy it because it was $12 for that plate.
We split that between four people. But then you think, I can buy, I understand that we're not talking about the same thing, but you can buy like a pound and a half for $4 in Publix. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, their food costs aren't that high. Asparagus is relatively inexpensive. But it was like, I'm sorry, we split it between three of us. Jeff doesn't eat green things. So it's like $4 for asparagus.
Right there with you, Jeff.
The hollandaise sauce that it came with was good, but again, it didn't make it $12 good.
We also had a couple of desserts that weren't exactly.
Sorry, I have to move to the dessert menu. Either. One was a double chocolate bundt cake.
And we thought, oh my God, double chocolate bundt cake. It was kind of bland.
Do you see the size of the teaspoon?
Yeah.
This is not that big, and this was $10. It's a la mode. Raspberry coulis with Valrhona fudge sauce.
The coulis was very, very tart. It was one of the things where everybody made that face and, you know
those veins that run down the side of your neck? It was so tart, your jaw seized up.
Wow.
So we kept trying to scrape the acid away from the chocolate.
The best part about that was actually the ice cream.
The ice cream was very good.
It was very good.
The last one was something called key lime pie in a jar. Key lime pie in a mason jar. I'm not entirely sure that you have to make it special by putting it in a jar.
I was going to say, you know, pie is pretty much perfect. Yeah. Pretty much perfected pie.
Yeah. You're making it harder.
Right, exactly.
They really were.
I just want to know how to make it.
Key lime pie in general?
Can you bake it in that? Or?
I imagine. I mean, like you can in mason jars.
Yeah, it will take hot stuff.
I don't know.
You don't have to bake key lime pie.
I didn't think
to make
so either.
It.
It's refrigerated, right?
It's like I know how to do it.
My mom made the best key lime pie in the world, and it had to be baked.
Yeah,
the crust is baked, but they might have put it in after it was cooked.
Here's the deal.
It was
way too tart.
Okay.
Key lime pie should have a lime flavor, but it shouldn't make my veins were already kind of in limbo, and this was just as tart as the coulis. Four people, and neither dessert was finished. So there was food that was good. I had read about the huge, expensive prices of this, and I didn't find most of the stuff.
They're on the pricey side, but I wouldn't say they were absurd.
Like, for instance, a 12-ounce filet mignon is $48. Go to Bull & Bear and get your filet mignon.
Right. I was just going to say there are better places to go and get a steak.
And again, for the most part, we thought the food was good. Some of the food was really good. And some of the food was just awful. So it was kind of a hit or miss. I would advise you, if you're going, stay away from dessert altogether.
See, when we were there, we were sitting out on the deck. And we just had this beautiful view of the lake in downtown Disney. It was incredible. And the service was phenomenal.
Yeah, I was going to say, the girl was really nice.
We thought the food quite good. Just, again, I'm not doing a review here. I really couldn't even, I remember I had the pork chop. I don't remember what anybody else had. But I just said, you know, really good. Little on the pricey side, but... definitely a good addition to downtown.
It definitely is. And I would tell you that if you're looking for appetizers and snacky things, that this was great. I was the only one whose meal was a real disappointment. Everybody else liked theirs. I mean, everybody else had a good meal. I would not say this was great, but I wouldn't say it was horrible except for what I got. I got a baked potato that was burnt on the outside and raw in the middle. I got four scallops for $20.
We were there one evening in the last room over. We found it hard to converse at the table because it was so noisy in there. Like, they needed to
were
put some...
Were you in
some...
the room that had all the glass windows?
Yes.
Yeah,
that bounced around a lot. Now, when we were just there with all of John's agent, the Dreams Unlimited travel agent, we had baked Alaska.
Yeah.
And it was... I don't think we have a picture of that.
I didn't picture
it was...
That.
it came when it came out, it was a good 12 to 14 inches high, and it was like this cone of chocolate ice cream with nuts and chocolate chips in it and stuff, and then a meringue over the top of it that had been baked. So they cut them into four pieces, and a piece of one quarter of it served a table of 10 people. It was a huge, huge dessert.
Yeah.
And that was delicious. I thought all of the food that we had at our agent meeting was delicious.
We tried the steak. They brought out some of the steak. It was very good.
They had potatoes with I can only equate it if you go to Burger King and you buy their onion rings, they give you something called onion ring sauce. Or if you get a Bloomin' Onion at Outback, they give you petal sauce. It came. There were these little new potatoes, and it came with that sort of spicy sauce. They were delicious.
Also, was a chicken dish that was very good.
Mm-hmm.
Chicken in a mango barbecue sauce. That was delicious. All the food was good. I didn't luck out at my meal. So
I think the service there, too, seemed to be – they were always there if you needed something. It wasn't like you were waiting for your server to come
back. Yeah, the service – I thought the service was outstanding.
Yeah, our server was really good, too. So we had a couple of bumps in the road. It wouldn't stop me from going back. I don't know that I would say to John, you know where I really want to go? I really want to go to the
You might have just gotten an off
meal. I think he just ordered poorly. And I think what should have happened, though, was I think the waiter should have said – well, he even said – when he ordered it, he said, oh, that's new. I haven't seen that before. So maybe an experienced waiter might have said, listen, that's not very big.
Listen, you're a big boy. Four scallops aren't going to fill you up.
No Tables in Wonderland discount for this restaurant. No Disney dining plan for this restaurant. But DVC members do get a discount on food. So
what did it cost you for the four of you?
It cost us about $200 all told for the four of us.
About what you would expect.
$50
to pay
a person. Yeah. Any wine?
A glass of wine, and then I tried. Do you have that drink list?
I do have the drink list.
I wanted one of those glasses that said Boathouse on it, so I ordered a drink.
What did you order?
Oh, it was a cucumber.
Cucumber cooler with Stoli citrus vodka, sweet and sour soda, and cucumber.
Whoa.
It would kill rats.
And it tasted like swamp water. It was like swamp water.
Four people tasted it and went, what is this? It was dreadful. Okay,
it could kill rats.
One drink.
There's a meme.
One drink.
There's a meme coming. Mark Joe Friday.
Careful.
Mark Joe Friday, get on that.
So, yeah, one specialty drink with a cup and then also one glass of wine. So $200 for all of that.
They do have an annual pass discount, though.
They do have an annual pass, right.
Actually, but now you're not going to be able to afford an annual pass, so you're not going to give it anyway.
I believe the DVC member discount was higher than the annual pass discount.
I think it's a steady one. The annual pass one's like 15% for lunch and then 10% for dinner.
And just outside the boathouse, they have the cars that drive into the water.
Yeah, the amphibious cars. The amphibious cars.
$125 for 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's expensive.
And you can fit three people in the car.
Yeah, it's expensive.
And you don't do the driving. No. Disney does the driving.
Right. But really cool cars. And
oh, yeah.
They are. Cars. And they've got this cool turntable thing. And it's kind of at the crux of two different directions.
I thought this was a fantastic addition to Disney Springs. I really did. I
agree.
I remember saying, because this was back in May that I was there, and I remember saying that, okay, if this is where they're going, this is going to be great.
Yeah,
I have a feeling that we're going to be really excited once Disney Springs finally.
I'm already excited. Now that we can park without it taking 3.5 hours, I'm very excited. I think the parking garage is great. I think what they're doing is great. Things are starting to open. I'm happy already. It was the only issue I had was I was 11 when they started building the parking garage that they just finished last year or this year. So
I miss the days when you could park closer to what you wanted to do.
Yeah. That'll
change once the second parking garage opens. Come.
They kind of explain we were just there with the agents, excuse me, and they explain the story of Disney Springs and how the different areas and where the comedy club used to be is going to be STK, and that's going to be the revamped the old train station.
Mm-hmm.
And in the walkway, you can see the turntable where the engines would turn around. Mm-hmm. So it's very I also like the idea that they're going to remodel and redo completely Planet Hollywood.
Yep.
Planet Hollywood is going to be gone.
However, it's still going to be a Planet Hollywood.
but it's going to look better.
Yeah, it's going to look like a conservatory.
And what they said was the theming of that area is going to be that the World's Fair was held here at one time, and that's a World's Fair pavilion, and the World's Fair is now gone, but the pavilions are still
there.
Cool. Oh, wow, that's cool.
Yeah, I thought it was neat, the story they were telling.
And Fulton's is closed for like 6 months starting the beginning of the year. But the thing that I found interesting when we did that tour is all the stores that are going in, Disney Springs is all sold out. So I think that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I believe Fulton's is going to have to do something to compete with the Boathouse.
Yeah.
Fulton's, the last time I was in there, Fulton's looks a little dated.
Yeah, it does. Oh, yeah. It does. So overall, a good review of the Boathouse.
It was good except for what I had.
Right.
We would go back.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. I would go back.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for that. That is going to do it for this episode of our show. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back with you again next week with another edition of the Diz Unplugged. Thanks for staying with us, everybody. And remember, stay out of the damn lakes. Have a good week, folks.